sports, entertainment, and Maine's best guest list. On The Pulse, AM 620 WZON, WZONThePulse.com, and the WZON app. This is Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Good morning. Welcome in. It's the best of Downtown, a Sunday, the 8th day of October. Downtown brought to you Monday through Friday and on Sunday morning by Cross Insurance, where security meets strength. Guests of the program come your way on the G&M Family Market phone line. G&M located, of course, on the corner of Route 1A, Route 46 in Holden. Open every day of the week from 6 a.m. until 9 p.m. with all you need. For some reason, there's something you can't find, you let them know. They'll make every effort to get it for you next time you stop by. Rich Kimball, Kerry Haskell here with you. A look back at some of our favorite conversations from the past week. This morning, we'll hear from Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe, author and critic Colin Fleming, Vinny Iyer from the Sporting News, and Marine Corps veteran John Musgrave, who was such a big part of the Ken Burns Lynn Novick Vietnam War series. Downtown brought to you by Quirk Auto Group, QuirkAuto.com. It's your car. Find it at Quirk. Let's get things rolling this morning. Always a blast when we get to talk with our friend Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and the Bob Ryan Podcast. As usual, covering a wide range of subjects, but starting with a column Bob had in the Globe a week ago about college sports, college basketball in particular, being an embarrassment of sorts. Here's Bob Ryan. As you point out, it sort of began about the time we brought organized sports into college with the Harvard crew team getting it rolling.
Harvard and Yale were the first intercollegiate sporting event recorded in American history on August 3rd, 1852. A Harvard boat rowed against plural Yale boats up on Lake Winnipesaukee in New Hampshire. And within a couple of years, someone was cheating. One of the two, and I forgot which, but I can assure you it happened, hired a phony coxswain that was not a student at the university. And that began, established the tradition of cheating in college sports, which has manifested itself in many, many ways. And now it's reaching a peak with this money being thrown around by the sneaker companies and the assorted goings-on that we are well aware of now in college, high-level college sport, primarily, obviously, football and basketball.
And you've brought this up with us before, but you also pointed out in the column yesterday, we're the only country that attempts to do this with our institutes of higher education.
Yes, Japan, I had it pointed out to me. College baseball is rather a big deal. High school baseball is huge. One of the most important sporting events in Japan is the annual high school baseball tournament. But college sports are huge as well, baseball only, and they do have on television, and there's a national interest. But I don't think it remotely begins to have the potential for corruption that our basketball and football have. And so we are the only one that does this. Europe doesn't do it. South America doesn't do it. Elsewhere in Asia, they don't do it. As far as I know, Antarctica doesn't do it. And Africa doesn't do it. And Australia doesn't do it. It's us. And we have this system that we have allowed to evolve, which we love. And I say we. I mean, millions and millions of Americans love the system. And I grew up with it. I grew up, my father was an assistant athletic director at Villanova when I was 6 years old. I was immersed in college basketball and football at the early age, going to games. I don't remember ever not going to games. And I fell in love with it, and I followed it, and I've been an avid fan of college sports ever since. But along the way, I've watched this evolution of it, and it's not good. It's ugly, and it's antithetical to any purpose of higher education. I recognize that, and yet I am an enabler, as are many others, probably you too.
Oh, yeah.
That we're addicted to the competition, and once they throw the ball up or kick it off, we no longer care how those players got there. Only that they are there and that we enjoy watching them play.
Now, I've seen some people suggest that we could solve some of this problem if we just diverted some of that big cash to the players. That seems like an oversimplification to me.
That has nothing to do with this issue. I reject that. I mean, that's a separate issue. And we all know what a hot-button issue that is. But I don't think paying the athletes is the issue here, that would take care of everything. No, paying the athletes after they get to school, after they've already been bought, what's that? Is that cleansing anything? No. So that's not the idea. That's a topic for discussion and a serious one and a worthy one and one that I think has got to be addressed sooner or later. And I have thoughts on that. I'm sure you do, too. But no, I don't think that that is the issue here in this thing, that this news that broke last week is separate from the issue of paying college athletes. That's my position. I clearly understand others disagree.
And while college is the focus here, but this all begins at much younger levels. And certainly, as you pointed out, when you bring in the whole AAU culture, that's a big factor in this as well.
Yeah, well, you know, once upon a time, the high school adolescent basketball was all about one thing, high school. And there were corrupt high school coaches. I remember well the charges leveled against the head coach at Camden, New Jersey High School, Clarence Turner, who was alleged to have, was pimping his kids to Louisville, and most notably Billy Thompson and Milt Wagner. And that was pretty evident. So I mean, these things were going on to a degree. But when the AAU got involved and people who weren't even remotely educators got involved and self-serving people with agendas that included and then they got involved, and then of course the sneaker companies getting involved at the highest level, running summer leagues, controlling kids from the age of 13 and 14, and bringing them in and then snaring them in their web, if you will, and getting them into a system that these kids understand that was utterly unknown to previous generations. It's all different now. It is not the way it was in the 50s, 60s, 70s, or even in the 80s. But it's firmly entrenched. That's the way you do it. And high schools have been cut out. These kids don't even think about it, worry about it. It used to be the biggest glory you could get, win the high school state championship. Mm. Well, and some of the high-level kids don't even worry about that anymore, because how many of them, Rich, and you know, have gone to multiple high school / prep schools?
Right.
Uh-huh. I say prep schools laughingly. and that's the way, that's the system. So, you know, it's a totally different system.
We're talking with Bob Ryan here on Downtown. Let's shift gears and talk Red Sox as they get set to begin the playoffs on Thursday. It's hard to get a read on this team. They've been so mercurial this year. Are they built for any kind of a postseason run?
My read is as follows. I am regarding this as they are totally and utterly and completely 100% playing with house money. The Indians are better. The Astros are better. And probably the Yankees are better. Certainly the Yankees have a better lineup. That's for sure. And that bullpen is outstanding. So anything they do is a bonus this year for me. The lineup, I mean, it speaks for itself. It's not a strong lineup, and that I don't know how they won. Really and truly, what they did was remarkable to win 93 or 4 games with the team that they put out there night after night, and it's remarkable. And more power to the bullpen and to the start that Sale gave them, although he's tailed off somewhat. The other teams are better, and so I think this is a pressure-free environment. And I hope fans agree with me that don't put any pressure on them. Expect nothing and be happy for whatever you get. That's what I think.
I'm sure, like me, you spent some time yesterday flashing back to 50 Sundays ago and mm-hmm. one of the great days in New England sports history.
I was there with my then-girlfriend, current wife of 48 years, and we were there behind home plate. And my quick story is that I had a summer job in Boston, and on a Friday in late July, I got paid, and I went down to the ballpark on my lunch hour, and I bought tickets for 6 upcoming games, and while I was gazing up at the board with the available games, I said, oh, look at that. The Twins are here on October 1. That would be pretty nice. So I bought tickets for that game. Box seats, $3, and we were behind the screen for that game. And it was the whole saga unfolded. The remainder of that summer in August and September were magical. And then finally that last weekend, the Saturday game coming from behind, and Cott gets hurt, and Boomer breaks the tie with a home run off Ron Klein to start the 7th inning. Nobody mentions that one. I got to mention that home run. Mm. And then, yes, it's the 3-run homer off Jim Merritt, who was brought in specifically to face some left-hander in the 8th inning, and they win that game. And then, of course, Sunday, all the events that have been well-documented, and Lomborg's bunt and all that. So, yes, it was. And then the post-game, and have you seen the photos? And have people, they've been posted, of the fans storming the press box, climbing up the screen?
Yes.
And there's a broadcaster waving his arms, looking horrified. Get down, get down. Sandy Koufax. And,
wow.
It was an eerie scene. Then I remember riding the T back to my girlfriend's house And everybody's got a transistor radio on listening to the Tigers and the Angels. And we get back to the house and listen to the end of that game. And the Red Sox have to sit around for 3 hours to await the outcome of the second game of that doubleheader to find out whether or not they were actually going to win or whether there would have to be a playoff game on Monday. And Dick McAuliffe comes up and with the men on in the ninth inning, and he had not hit a single double play all year. So what's he do? Because baseball was the greatest conversational sport ever conceived by mortal man. He goes 4-6-3. The first double play of the year, ends the season, and makes the Red Sox the pennant winners. Yeah, I remember it.
Just a little bit, yeah. I know you love history. Did you watch any of the Ken Burns Vietnam War series?
I mean, we are DVRing it. I'm through episode 4, and as a matter of fact, I'm planning this tonight would be a good time to pick up another one. And because now from this rest of this week is going to be devoted to baseball, obviously, and for me, obviously. Tonight's the last opportunity until, for quite a while down the road. But thank God for DVR. It's captivating. It's fantastic, as all the Ken Burns productions are.
Yeah, watch for our next guest on the show, who features prominently in it.
A
Marine from Missouri by the name of John Musgrave, whose story is incredible.
He's a star. As a matter of fact, I was listening to a local NPR broadcast today in which they played the excerpt of him talking about going to the Vietnam Memorial, and it's hard not to miss up. I'm aware of who he is, and he has been a tremendous contributor to that. Absolutely.
Yeah, you better believe it. Who's on the podcast this week?
Well, we're taking a week off and getting ready for a third season, which starts next week. And I am booking. I haven't booked that one yet, but down the road, I've got first commitment from Upton Bell, who's got a new book out about his life. And, of course, people should know that he was the 33-year-old general manager of the Patriots, and he was the son of Burt Bell, who was the commissioner of the NFL.
Right.
And also, his mother was a Broadway star. He grew up in a way that you didn't and I didn't. No one listening to you did. It's a phenomenal, interesting, fascinating life from a fascinating guy, and I've known him. We've been friends for 35, 40 years, so he's going to be a guest coming up, and I've got some other good ones, I hope, lined up. Things go on. I'm also part of a Sports Reporters podcast that debuted a couple of weeks ago, and I'm permanently a member with Mitch Albom and Mike Lupica twice a week. Suddenly I'm podcasting myself, all the time.
Now, and so I have to ask before we let you go, because I know you were watching like I was last night, when do you have the time to do any lamping?
Well, I cleared decks last night. I hadn't seen Ray Donovan, and I missed a whole year last year, and that shook me up, but I got ready for Larry Donald. I thought it was great. I thought that, I tweeted immediately this morning, he's still throwing 98 on the black. I just think it was so ingenious, not only the topics that he chose, but the way he wove the whole thing together. It was great. And I if you're a Larry David fan, I don't think you're going to be disappointed. I think you'll enjoy anybody that didn't see it. But I'm so glad he's back.
It's Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe on the Best of Downtown for your Sunday morning. When we come back, we'll talk about a Maine artist who worked all over the world but started and began and ended here in Maine. Marsden Hartley up next on the Best of Downtown.
At Quirk Motor City, you get a huge selection of quality pre-owned vehicles priced to fit any budget. Plus, the Quirk Motor City pre-owned difference, with a limited warranty that's 3 times longer than the average dealer's pre-owned warranty. Free Maine State inspections for the life of the vehicle. A free Carfax vehicle history report. And Quirk Motor City's certified pre-owned 118-point inspection. It's your quality pre-owned car. Find it at Quirk Motor City in Bangor, Belfast, Augusta, and Portland. View our pre-owned inventory online at quirkauto.com.
Biking season is here, and the only way to be sure that you're road or trail ready is to bring your bike to Slipping Gears Cycling, Bangor's only full-time cycling sales and service experts at 753 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor before prime riding season slips away. Slipping Gears Cycling, 753 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor, Bangor's best full-service bike shop. Outstanding service, huge stock. Like them on Facebook for updates, shop in person and online at slippinggears.com.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength. strength.
Bennett Auto Center is the place to go for full-service auto care. From oil changes to engine jobs, they can handle your every need. Stop in at 24 Thatcher Street in Bangor and talk with the experienced local people at Bennett's. They offer great service, competitive prices on a wide range of tires, and best of all, people you can trust. Visit the website for more information at BennettAutoCenter.com. Give them a call at 947-0351 or drive on into Bennett Auto Center, 24 Thatcher Street, Bangor.
Hey, hey. Now, don't you tell me you don't remember me, because I sure as heck fire remember you.
Downtown with Rich Kimball and the Briar Patch present An Evening with Actor and Author Stephen Tobolowsky, Wednesday night, November 15 at 7:30.
Within 1 minute, I was mistaken for being both a cab driver and a jet pilot. That is acting.
Stephen Tobolowsky at the Brewer Performing Arts Center, Pendleton Street in Brewer.
Bang!
Whether you know him as Ned Ryerson from Groundhog Day or from his roles on Silicon Valley, The Goldbergs, Memento, or Deadwood, you'll love the stories he shares from his new book, My Adventures with God.
Am I right or am I right? Or am I right?
Tickets are $30 and are on sale at The Briar Patch, Central Street in Bangor. And your ticket to the show also gets you a copy of Stephen's new book, My Adventures with God.
Bang!
Don't miss Stephen Tobolowsky, November 15 in Brewer.
Movie stories mixed with life stories.
Proceeds benefit Congregation Bethel of Bangor. For the seventh consecutive year, Green Acres Kennel Shop has been selected as the region's best dog trainer. They've also been recognized by Best Businesses of America as one of the top 40 dog training facilities in New England. Green Acres is a pet-friendly facility where force, fear, and pain are never used to manage or train a pet. Their goal is to help your dog by using scientific, proven, and effective training methods. Learn more at greenacreskennel.com or stop by and see them at 1653 Union Street in Bangor.
We love Green Acres Kennel Shop, a home away from home.
Penobscot Theater presents
You're Just Another Dirty Birdie.
A romance novelist injured in a crash.
Darling, relax. I'm a trained nurse.
Now held hostage.
I'm your number one fan.
Writing as if his life depends on it, because it does. The main premiere of a Stephen King classic, Misery, at Bangor's historic opera house. October 12th through November 5th. Tickets at 942-3333. PenobscotTheater.org.
Hi, this is Mike Toole. My company is ClearPoint Financial. We're an independent retirement plan advisory firm located right here in Bangor, Maine. At ClearPoint Financial, we provide guidance-based, comprehensive retirement plan solutions to companies that are concerned about their employees' retirement income security. We focus on plan participants. We help them strive to achieve retirement income security. We provide ongoing engagement, education, investment advice, and service that exceeds expectation. For more details on our financial wellness programs, call me today at 899-2552. ClearPoint Financial, the official financial advisor of the Maine Black Bears.
As I write this letter, send my love to you.
Best of Downtown for your Sunday morning. Rich Kimball and Carrie Haskell here. And a little taste of our weekly visit with author and critic Colin Fleming, as he remembers the Maine artist Marsden Hartley.
Hometown boy, definitely for you, who ranged pretty far, both geographically and artistically, certainly. Emotionally, spiritually, he's a man who went through a lot of different things. He, as you said, was born in Maine and had a rough go of it right from the start, really. Mother died when he was fairly young. Father remarried. He took the last name of his new mother as his first name. Family goes to Ohio, leaving him at 14 years old in Maine to work in a shoe factory, which must have been trying. Think about that.
Mm.
We complain about now. Can you imagine what you would do with that on social media? Get really upset. And it sort of instigated this notion of depression in Hartley. Life was not going to be very easy for him in some ways, whereas in others, in terms of his development as an artist, proficiency was going to be the norm. So right from the start, that note was kind of struck.
Yeah, and had some inspirations along the way as well, and inspired, I'm sure, by painters, but also inspired by authors, writers, people like Thoreau and Walt Whitman.
Yes, he loved the Transcendentalists, Thoreau, Emerson. That's just clotted throughout his work. And in Ohio, he meets Sherwood Anderson, who wrote Winesburg, Ohio. And you wouldn't think that this kind of like middle American author that F. Scott Fitzgerald was going to look up to so much, and this eventual proto-modernist painter would hit it off. But that's exactly what happened. And Anderson even said to Hartley, you should try your hand at prose. And I think it's interesting because when we look at Hartley's canvases, they're very writerly. They'll be representational of an autumn scene, for instance, lots of those, which is why he's good for our purposes right now. But he has a way with color that it's a technique for irradiating almost, bringing something out that's deeper than just mere pigment. Here is this copse of trees we're looking at. It's like a story within a still space, very writerly, right from the start.
And also a guy who seemingly met everybody, was in Europe and was part of that scene for a while, and also got a tremendous amount of help and encouragement from Alfred Stieglitz.
Yes, and he goes to Europe and he hangs out with Gertrude Stein's crowd. And again, this is a weird juxtaposition in some ways, because we have this adherent of regionalism. And you have to remember, if you were a painter in America, at the time especially, you always would have felt a little bit behind, or a lot behind even, the Europeans. We hadn't been here that long. We hadn't been doing as much with the visual arts for nearly that span of time. And so there's this element of like the folk sort of craft movement in Hartley's paintings. Yet, he has this virtuosic touch. You see it to a degree with Child Hassam, who also painted in Maine. But he was more of an impressionist who just happened to work in America. Hartley had these rugged American tones. He had this European cosmopolitan aspect. It was really a blend with him throughout his career. And I think a lot of that is that European element. Yet he was always most at home in New England, both in Maine and in later Gloucester, Massachusetts.
We're talking with Colin Fleming here on Downtown about Maine artist Marsden Hartley, who I think it was, in the late 30s, moved back to Maine and said he just wanted to be essentially the Maine artist.
Right. He wanted to be the de facto guy you thought of for Maine painting. And I think to a degree, he was one of the contenders for that. You have Winslow Homer. So two majors sort of like throwing hands with each other for that title. But I think of him as more New England endemic than Maine specific. For instance, between 1920 and 1936, Hartley goes multiple times to Dogtown in Gloucester. And he suffered with depression throughout his life. It was certainly a difficult time to be gay, which is what Hartley was. And he goes to this, I like how these two stories sort of knit up. He goes to this abandoned settlement on the north shore of Boston that Dogtown was founded in the late 1600s. And it was this prosperous settlement. But what ends up happening is the men start dying off at sea. There's the Revolutionary War. More men die in that. The land wasn't very farmable. And the females who were left, comprising the bulk of the population, they move away from Dogtown. They abandon it, and they abandon many of their dogs, who became feral, very hound of the Baskervilles. Eventually, this town is covered by forest, and it is to this covered-up settlement that Hartley comes. And at first, he's scared of it, and it deepens his depression. But he spends more time there, and he starts depicting these giant boulders. He called it America's Stonehenge, crossed with Easter Island. And he does a series of canvases that are to American painting with something like Monet's Houses of Parliament canvases are to Impressionism. Really just a striking series of this man who found peace in this place where I hike it. And of course, it's allegedly haunted. There were witches. There are places that my photographs won't even come out. But it's very calming, and you can see what Hartley saw in it, both in terms of, aha, I'll depict this on a canvas, and what it taught him about himself in going there.
And along with his work in the world of art, he also dabbled in writing as well, writing both poems and short stories.
He did, and he left a wonderful sort of incomplete journal. And you mentioned Thoreau before. It has elements of Thoreau, really. And it also sort of suggests to me, a lot of people don't know that Rimbaud wrote a journal at the end of his life when he stopped writing poems. It became his outlet. And it's a little bit like a cross between Rimbaud's journals and Thoreau's journals. We always think of Thoreau as like just Walden. And it's very confessional. And if you read these piecemeal bits now, you can see how the way he thought of language would inform the way he would sort of have a pointillism element to his painting and blur that into more elongated strokes. He thought so visually, and it's just this wonderful record of someone who painted the way he did because he did so many other things at the same time.
He was also, I was reading, was influenced early on by Germans and German Expressionism, but all of that changed a little bit during the course of the war years as he backed away from that a little bit.
Sure, a lot. And we think about German Expressionism now, like what comes to mind? Maybe it's films like Cabinet of Dr. Caligari and Nosferatu, where we have those very hard lines, those strange angles. But if you look at like a painting, Autumn Sonata, of anything he does where it's a lot of just foliage busting through the canvas, like it's almost three-dimensional, that it's kind of along those same lines, I think, that it's a way for him to, again, blend multiple genres, even multiple topographies, which you don't see a lot in the American painting at that time. So it's like he took German Expressionism and he took those urban scapes and he tucked them away into the New England forest.
And you mentioned Winslow Homer, and I think here in Maine, people embrace Hartley's work with that of Homer, and then our shared look at the Wyeth family and our claim on them that we have to share with Pennsylvania, of course. But how about outside of Maine? How is Hartley's work viewed in the rest of the country?
I think outside of Maine, he's seen as someone who was very progressive. My hunch is he's looked at as more of a local lad made painterly good in terms of Maine. But Winslow Homer, for instance, it's very naturalistic, his painting. It's rustic often, and even when Hartley is depicting nature, he never feels like he's ensconced in nature. And I think that's made him worldly, 20th century, modernistically friendly in a way that someone like Homer isn't. We associate Homer, for instance, with a time period. And I don't really do that with Marsden Hartley. He's like someone who's, again, it's like Joyce. It's like Ezra Pound. It's like Gertrude Stein. It's like those people he admired. He's a modernist, and he always feels of whatever age it is that you happen to be looking at him from.
Well, it's been fun. I really enjoyed going back and looking at some of his work that I haven't looked at in far too long. And I would urge anybody listening to check it out and go back and learn more. Reacquaint yourself with the work of Marsden Hartley. Fascinating stuff here. And next time, I can't wait for this. Next week, we talk about one of the greats in American music history, Thelonious Monk.
Yes, Thelonious Sphere Monk, who on the very day will be marking his 100th birthday, and someone who, although their time period didn't really, I wonder if Marsden Hartley would listen to Thelonious Monk, but I bet he'd dig him. Very elliptical way of writing Monk, and certainly someone who drew on a lot of seemingly divergent styles himself. So, should be a good one.
We're looking forward to it next Tuesday. Thanks as always, Colin. We'll see you then.
All right, thanks, Rich.
That's Colin Fleming here on The Best of Downtown. When we come back, we talk some NFL football. We're at the quarter pole of the 2017 season. We check in with columnist Vinny Iyer of The Sporting News next.
When it comes to your health, early detection is the best protection. That's why the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center provides 3D mammography to offer better answers and greater peace of mind, identifying problem areas that a standard mammogram might miss. It provides precise images for all women, including those with dense breast tissue. Call 907-1682 to schedule your 3D mammogram at the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center. 3D, providing peace of mind for you, your family, and your loved ones.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
Whatever you're looking for, G&M Family Market has got what you need. They're on the corner of Route 1A and Route 46 in Holden. They have fresh produce delivered daily, a great selection of meats and seafood, beer and wine, a Dunkin' Donuts right there, and an Amato's as well. And if there's something you can't find, just ask, and they'll make every effort to get it for you next time. It's G&M Family Market, Route 1A, Route 46 in Holden. They're open every day from 6 in the morning until 9 p.m.
There's only one way Hartley's Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Newport does business. The right way. Owned and operated for over 60 years by the Hartley family, Hartley's offers the same or even better prices and discounts on vehicles as those offered at mega dealerships. And along with that comes their renowned small dealer service and exceptional attitude toward you, their customers. Hartley's values your business and your trust. You're never pushed, never pressured. No one will chase you around the lot, but no one will ignore you either. Hartley's wants you to feel comfortable at their dealership. So feel free to look around, and Hartley's professional sales staff will always be there when you need help. You'll like the place, you'll like the people, and you'll like the way they do business. The right way. The folks at Hartley's wouldn't do it any other way. Always remember, if you're out there looking around, the best deals aren't in the city, they're in the country. Hartley's Country, at the Triangle in Newport. You'll always be treated the right way at Hartley's.
Go Blue!
Sir, you're here for the cheerleading tryouts?
Yeah, for the class of 82. Gotta show my school spirit.
I know a better way. The UMaine Alumni Signature Rewards Visa Card from University Credit Union. Low rates, no annual fees, and it earns reward points for travel, merchandise, or cash back.
Woo, sounds easier than a backflip.
Apply online today at UMaineAlumniCard.com.
Federally insured by NCUA. Terms and conditions apply, subject to credit approval.
Hey, hey. Now, don't you tell me you don't remember me, because I sure as heck fire remember you.
Downtown with Rich Kimball and the Briar Patch present An Evening with actor and author Stephen Tobolowsky, Wednesday night, November 15 at 7:30.
Within 1 minute, I was mistaken for being both a cab driver and a jet pilot. That is acting.
Stephen Tobolowsky at the Brewer Performing Arts Center, Pendleton Street in Brewer.
Bang!
Whether you know him as Ned Ryerson from Groundhog Day or from his roles on Silicon Valley, The Goldbergs, Memento, or Deadwood, you'll love the stories he shares from his new book, My Adventures with God.
Am I right or am I right? Or am I right?
Tickets are $30 and are on sale at The Briar Patch, Central Street in Bangor. And your ticket to the show also gets you a copy of Stephen's new book, My Adventures with God.
Bang!
Don't miss Stephen Tobolowsky, November 15 in Brewer.
Movie stories mixed with life stories.
Proceeds benefit Congregation Bethel of Bangor.
Back on the Best of Downtown, your Sunday morning, brought to you by Cross Insurance, where security meets strength. Rich Kimball, Kerry Haskell with you. Four games into the NFL season. Who are the contenders? Who are the pretenders? Well, we talked about that and more this week with Sporting News NFL columnist Vinny Iyer. The new power rankings are out from you guys. And number one, well, it makes sense. The only unbeaten team in the NFL, those Kansas City Chiefs. How good are they?
They're pretty good. You look at their offense, and the thing that's been the biggest surprise of this team is that they're winning with offense. You look at the defense, and there's some struggles there for sure. Without Eric Berry, he's kind of the captain, the leader. You haven't seen a lot of pressure stopping big plays from them, but the good news is Kareem Hunt and Alex Smith are making the big plays when they need it, whoever is around them. So I think as long as that continues, the Chiefs will be fine, but a good matchup this week on Sunday night against the Texans.
Big group of teams with records of 3-1 right now. Out of that bunch of 3-1 teams, who are the legitimate contenders and who are the pretenders?
Well, I think you have to look at the teams that you know very well. And in the NFC, you have to start with the playoff teams from last year, the Packers, the Falcons, the Lions, three teams that we can now trust because they're consistent and do that. And in the AFC, you look on the other side, same thing. The Steelers, you're very much into it. I think the Broncos are definitely turning things around where I think you believe them as they head into their bye as a team that's going to be around at the AFC race. So I think you start with them. I think everyone else, we're still figuring out. So the middle, interesting to see how the Panthers and Eagles respond and can continue to play each other here next week. So teams like that, still figuring out if they're going to be more like 8-8 teams. But the established playoff teams are a lot easier to figure out.
Certainly up here, the Patriots have been a huge disappointment so far. It's still pretty early in the season. What's most surprising is that the 2-2 record the Patriots have, the two losses at home, or the fact that their defense has just been awful?
Well, I think their defense being awful leading to the two losses at home has been the biggest disappointment there. I mean, you look at the talent there, it looks pretty darn good. So you wonder if there's a lot of things they can correct there. I mean, this is now a one-month thing. You usually see with Bill Belichick and Matt Patricia, these things are fixed pretty quickly. They've been fixed immediately after the Chiefs game. But now you see that consistently. The last 2 weeks against their rookie quarterback making his first start, and then Cam Newton, who was banged up and not really doing anything this year, to make those guys come alive. And now you get Jameis Winston with his weapons. He started to get hot here. It's a big, big test. Almost in must-win situation. I never thought I would say the Patriots in week 5, but here we are.
Boy, Deshaun Watson was sure impressive against the Patriots last week. He looks like the real deal in the early going.
Definitely. I mean, what I like about Deshaun Watson, he's not caring about how he's getting things done. He's not getting a lot of style points for maybe the way he's throwing or the mechanics or footwork. But this guy, we know he's all about winning. That's what he did in Clemson. He just makes the plays he needs to make. At any time, whether with his arm or his legs, he's going to do that. So he may not be pretty. Really reminds me of early Michael Vick and the way he exploded on the scene in terms of just kind of doing things that are wow and trying to figure out how to stop him. Just not an easy guy to defend back on court.
We're talking with Vinny Iyer of the Sporting News here on Downtown. Are the 0-4 Giants as bad as they've looked so far?
Well, unfortunately, the thing that they could count on last season has let them down is the defense. We made so much about their offensive line, which isn't very good to begin with, and the fact that they can't run the ball. But now you throw in the fact that they can't play defense, and this is what you get. So you saw how important that defense was last year with how they were able to get the playoffs at 11-5. Now they've already lost 4 games, and you look at the defensive numbers. They've been totally gashed against the run. They're giving up pass plays we haven't seen. And then now you look at the injury report. It's all loaded with guys here. Both defensive ends, Olivier Vernon and Jason Pierre-Paul are hurt. Running backs are hurt. So it's not getting any better than you have your best offensive lineman, Weston Richburg. One guy they could trust, now he has a concussion.
Teams looking for quarterbacks. E.J. Manuel's got himself a job. If only there were a quarterback out there with experience who's got mobility. What's going on?
Yeah, it's funny now that it's so weird to me that Titans would trot out Matt Castle there with Brandon Weeden behind him if the Marks were to play. And same thing out there in Oakland with Derek Carr just turning D.J. Manuel. But they like Manuel for some reason. And I think when you look at Manuel and Kaepernick's skill set, it's very similar. But I think they just went for the cheap guy. I don't think they necessarily expected Manuel to rise up the depth chart and pass Connor Cook there to be the number twos. But I think after getting a taste of Cook with Carr out last year, they needed somewhere at least veteran who could move around to do something. So Kaepernick, it doesn't look like there's going to be any calls. But these two teams needing to save their seasons didn't do it. I don't think anybody will.
Vinny, we always like to get some good fantasy insight from you. Who would be some good waiver wire pickups if they're available this week?
Well, I think one receiver you have to look in Arizona. Everyone's looking at John Brown and J.J. Nelson, but Jerron Brown has actually been the better receiver the past 2 weeks. He's starting right there with Larry Fitzgerald. So that's a guy I think that every league owner should be looking at. In the backfield, it's a little trickier. We did have this major injury with Dalvin Cook. So I think Latavius Murray has to be added there. I'm not crazy about Murray's talents, but he's a starting running back all of a sudden. You can't ignore any of those. And it might be the case for Aaron Jones just for 1 week of Green Bay if Tom Montgomery can't play with that rib injury. So running backs, things always change at that position pretty quickly, and you have to always be aware of that.
Well, what's the biggest game this week, one that we ought to keep our eyes on come Sunday?
Well, I think there's a couple, but to me it has to be the Packers and Cowboys. A rematch of last year's NFC Championship game, 34-31 was the final. I expect a similar game. This is pretty must-win territory again for the Cowboys because the way this division still could get away from them, not by the Giants, but the Eagles and Redskins. So they can't really fall to 2-3, lose a second straight home game here. But I do like Green Bay in this one just because the way Aaron Rodgers is playing, Cowboys defense has really been exposed, and I think that's going to cost them here again. They didn't have to deal with Jordy Nelson in the playoff game. They will have to deal with him in this game.
Vinny Iyer of the Sporting News, talking NFL football with us here on Downtown. When we come back, one of the guys who made the Ken Burns, Lynn Novick, Vietnam War series on PBS come to life. Former Marine John Musgrave. Up next, it's the best of Downtown on the Pulse, WZON.
At Quirk Motor City, you get a huge selection of quality pre-owned vehicles priced to fit any budget. Plus, the Quirk Motor City pre-owned difference, with a limited warranty that's 3 times longer than the average dealer's pre-owned warranty. Free main state inspections for the life of the vehicle. A free Carfax vehicle history report. And Quirk Motor City's certified pre-owned 118-point inspection. It's your quality pre-owned car. Find it at Quirk Motor City in Bangor, Belfast, Augusta, and Portland. View our pre-owned inventory online at quirkauto.com.
Road bike, mountain bike, hybrid, recumbent, tandem. No one size fits all when it comes to quality bicycles for the road or the trails. If you're interested in any type of bike, see the experts at Slipping Gears Cycling, 753 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor. Bangor's best full-service bike shop. Outstanding service, huge stock. Like them on Facebook for updates. Shop in person and online at slippinggears.com.
Do we ever agree on anything?
We both like the Bangor Mall Cinema 10.
The cozy stadium seating.
I like the bargain prices for all shows on Tuesday.
Hot buttered popcorn and candy.
The Dolby and digital surround sound is perfect.
I think I'll have a birthday party there for the kids.
I've got 2 tickets.
I hope one of them's for me.
So we can check out that action movie.
No, romance. Comedy.
The Bangor Mall Cinema 10 at 557. Stillwater Avenue in Bangor. Call 942-1303 or visit online at yourneighborhoodtheater.com.
Bennett Auto Center is the place to go for full-service auto care. From oil changes to engine jobs, they can handle your every need. Stop in at 24 Thatcher Street in Bangor and talk with the experienced local people at Bennett's. They offer great service, competitive prices on a wide range of tires, and best of all, people you can trust. Visit the website for more information at BennettAutoCenter.com. Give them a call at 947-0351 or drive on in to Bennett Auto Center, 24 Thatcher Street, Bangor.
Hi, this is Eric.
And Christine.
From the Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, inviting you to come in and shop our carefully cultivated selection of fine wine, craft beer, meads, and ciders, and experience what has made Bangor Wine a fixture of Bangor's downtown for over 15 years.
Taste our delicious new Tavolo specialty oils and vinegars, artisan cheeses, cured meats, and crusty baguettes.
Bangor Wine and Cheese offers the service and knowledge to help anyone from the seasoned buyer to the nervous newcomer.
Bangor Wine and Cheese, family owned and operated since 2000. Is located at 86 Hammond Street in the heart of downtown Bangor.
Drink, eat, live better.
Hi, this is Mike Toole. My company is ClearPoint Financial. We're an independent retirement plan advisory firm located right here in Bangor, Maine. At ClearPoint Financial, we provide guidance-based, comprehensive retirement plan solutions to companies that are concerned about their employees' retirement income security. We focus on plan participants. We help them strive to achieve retirement income security. We provide ongoing engagement, education, investment advice, and service that exceeds expectation. For more details on our financial wellness programs, call me today at 899-2552. ClearPoint Financial, the official financial advisor of the Maine Black Bears.
Penobscot Theater presents...
You're Just Another Dirty Birdie.
A romance novelist injured in a crash.
Darling, relax. I'm a trained nurse.
Now held hostage.
I'm your number one fan.
Writing as if his life depends on it, because it does. The Maine premiere of a Stephen King classic, Misery. At Bangor's historic Opera House, October 12th through November 5th. Tickets at 942-3333. PenobscotTheater.org.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again.
Well, if you watched the Vietnam War series on PBS like millions of Americans did, you were certainly moved by the story of our next guest on Downtown, John Musgrave. Joined the Marine Corps out of Missouri, saw heavy action in the northern province of Cantien, where he was shot and nearly killed, managed to survive because of the help of his Marine Corps comrades, and then in later years became a vocal advocate against the war. A lot of people say he is the heart and soul of Ken Burns and Lynn Novick's series. We had the opportunity to talk with him from his home in Kansas, our conversation with John Musgrave. Are you surprised, John, with the reaction people have had to the series?
Well, I'm very pleased with what I've heard so far. I've only received one negative comment, but I don't know what's going on nationwide. I am just aware of what people are saying in my area.
Your story has been so fascinating to watch through the course of this series. Could you have imagined, as a young Marine coming out of Missouri, your own personal transformation?
No. No, I couldn't. If you're referring especially to my turning against the war in which I fought, I could have never imagined it and probably would have been willing to fight anybody that suggested it. I was I'd wanted to be a Marine all my life, and I was very proud of being a Marine, and I still proud of being a Marine, and I owe the Marine Corps a great deal. I'm alive because of the Marine Corps, but I realized that this was a lot bigger than me, and that I had swore that I would serve my country when I became a Marine, and I realized that there was more service required of me. It was one of the most difficult decisions I ever made in my life.
Well, and I was so impressed in watching the series that you said that you were a Marine when you were fighting in Vietnam, and you were a Marine when you were speaking out, and you felt doing your duty when you spoke out against the war.
Absolutely right.
Your story has resonated so much, and you know, part of it is because this is so fresh in our minds. In many ways, it's never gone away. As you look back, and as you talked about this with Ken and Lynn and the producers, was it painful for you to go back to those times, or was it cathartic in some way?
It was both. I'm not trying to be confusing here, but I mean, it's both. It felt good to be able to tell the story, and on the other hand, the story is difficult to tell. So it wasn't all of one thing.
42 years since those last folks pulled out of Saigon. Why haven't we been able to put this war behind us?
I don't think that America has tried. I think they, rather than try to put it behind them, they just tried to bury it, forget it. It was uncomfortable. And that meant burying us. And we wouldn't allow it. And fortunately, a lot of other people wouldn't either. And it was fortunate for us that two extraordinary citizens of this country, Ken Burns and Lynn Novick, decided that that story needed to be reexamined. And when I first heard that they were doing something on Vietnam, I just thought it was like turning on a light in a dark room.
We're talking with...
I knew that now the story was going to be told, and it was going to be honestly. No axe to grind. Just, that when they tell America, and that's what they do, they make history come alive. They were able to do that with the Civil War when there wasn't a living survivor to talk to them. And it's been easier in dealing with World War II and now our war, because there's still those of us who experienced it.
Now, have you been watching the series as it's played out live?
Yes. I wanted to be able to, I needed to know if I was going to be called what people had just seen. So each night I watched each episode with the rest of America.
We're talking with John Musgrave of the Vietnam War series, available, of course, online, on demand from PBS as well. When we talked with Ken and Lynn earlier in the year, they told us that their belief is one of the most important lessons to take from Vietnam is don't hate the warriors, don't blame the warriors. Do you think that they've conveyed that through this story?
I think they have very well. And all the comments that I've received have been directly related to that. Each one making a point of saying in their comments, I want to thank you for your service. And I guarantee you we didn't hear that when we came home. And it's nice to hear it now. They accomplished that mission.
When I watched the epilogue last night, they mentioned the fact that you're working with veterans today. Can you talk a little bit about the work you do?
I've assisted the United States Army, the 1st Infantry Division at Fort Riley, Kansas. I worked with them for a while, assisting troops as they came home. I taught members of the command of the division what post-traumatic stress was and the symptoms were. It was education about post-traumatic stress. And then when we worked with the troops themselves, it was education and strategies. When I left working with the 1st Infantry Division, I still worked with the Wounded Warrior Barracks there. And we would bring the commanding officer of the Wounded Warrior Barracks would bring Iraqi and Afghani vets who were struggling with post-traumatic stress to Lawrence, Kansas, where I had a group of Vietnam veterans, and we would sit down together, and we would talk to them and give them our past experiences and the strategies that we had come up with to deal with post-traumatic stress at a time when there was no help available at all. It allowed us to survive this long. And then they related to us the things they were going through. And it was a very successful program. And we discovered that it wasn't old men talking to young men. It wasn't Vietnam veterans talking to Iraqi and Afghani veterans. It was combat veterans sitting down and helping each other.
Well, John Musgrave, we thank you not only for your service then, your service that continues today, and we thank you, people like you and Tim O'Brien. Your stories, I thought, brought this special to life and helped all of us process and continue to process what happened in Vietnam. We thank you for sharing those stories with Ken Burns and Lynn Novick and with us.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity of talking with you.
What a real honor it was for us to talk with John Musgrave from the Vietnam War series here on Downtown as we wrap it up, the best of show for a Sunday morning. Thanks to John for joining us along with Bob Ryan, Colin Fleming, Vinny Iyer. Now, holiday tomorrow, Indigenous Peoples Day around these parts, Kerry, but we're working. We're not taking a day off tomorrow.
We are not. I will be here and you will be here, and there will be a show.
We will have a show, and not only a show, but a pretty darn fine one as well. Bruce Campbell joining us tomorrow. A terrific actor, talented guy, funny guy, author of a number of books, including his newest, Hail to the Chin. Bruce, off on a book tour, will join us from Vancouver tomorrow, as we were saying earlier in the week. It's about as far away from us as he could get, and I think it gives him a little comfort zone to come on the show tomorrow afternoon.
I'm surprised more guests don't do the same.
I am as well. And you and I are both reading the book. It's great.
Yeah, it's a really fun book to read.
So Bruce Campbell tomorrow afternoon, plus Maine football's Joe Harris-Simiak. We get movie reviews from Alan Adams of the Maine Edge, and Mike Lowe, the Portland Press Herald, joins us. Don't forget Red Sox baseball in the playoffs this afternoon at 2:30 right here on The Pulse, WZON. The Pulse Morning Show at 6 tomorrow. We'll catch you tomorrow afternoon at 4 right here on AM 620 WZON. Stick around. Casey Kasem, American Top 40, the 80s, coming up next.
Before the night is over, happy again. The light's so much brighter there. You can't forget all your troubles, forget all your cares. So go downtown, where I'm